The Addiction Podcast, Point of No Return.
Hello, I'm Joni Siegel, the host of The Addiction Podcast. In 2022, over 100,000 people died from drug and alcohol abuse, and that number is growing daily. Fentanyl poisoning, pot, cocaine, heroin, and even psychedelics and alcohol all contribute to this crisis, while we're bombarded with promotions from thousands of rehabs. Newborns are born addicted, and the majority of homeless people struggle with drug addiction. Drug dealers exploit online resources to sell to teens, and antidepressant use is spiraling out of control. This podcast features brutally honest guest interviews revealing harsh realities and offering hope and solutions through their stories. We don't sugarcoat anything. Guests speak raw and real. More importantly, you'll find inspiration to understand, overcome, and achieve recovery, whether for yourself or to help others, some within your own family, many among your friends or associates. Whether you're seeking help or just a glimmer of hope, our podcast equips you with the latest insights to confront this generational battle. Many listeners tell us they want to join the fight, but do not have the time or money to act, lobby, or just help. If that's you, go to www.patreon.com/theaddictionpodcast and see how you can help. Dr. Dallas Bragg, and later on in the interview, you can tell me what kind of doctor you are. But anyway, thank you so much for being willing to be on the podcast today. You bring a different perspective. And I thought what I might do to start off is to ask you the impact of crystal meth in the gay community.
Mm-hmm. Yes. So, you know, crystal meth in the gay community has its own nuances that are, I think, very different and require a different treatment in a different situation. In that, so the gay male population have Grindr and another app called Sniffies. So these are, they're labeled dating apps.
But oh, those are apps.
Those are apps.
Okay, so but specifically for gay men.
Specifically for gay men. And how it's different is I can log in and I can see, oh, 10 feet away, there's a gay man right now. It's GPS driven. Same thing with the Sniffies app. So what this app has turned into is a very simple, easy way to find crystal meth. You can find it. And I do this, when I speak to groups, we do this live. We pull up the Grindr app and we find out, we see how fast we can come up with crystal meth and a party. Wow. So it has its own language too. So P-A-R, capital T-Y, party means, T stands for Tina, which is the gay nomenclature for crystal meth. You can open that app up almost, well, I would say any city in the U.S., almost any country. And I hear men from London, Pakistan, Hong Kong.
In the battle against substance abuse, knowledge is power. And now there's a groundbreaking solution. Substance Use Prevention Education, or SUPE, SUPE. Imagine a platform that equips parents, families, and individuals with the tools they need to navigate the dangers of drugs. SUPE isn't just another website. It's a comprehensive educational platform designed for everyone. From informative articles to engaging videos, SUPE offers a wealth of resources tailored to every age group. But what truly sets SUPE apart? It's meticulously crafted curriculums developed by education professionals and substance abuse specialists. And the impact? Remarkable. In less than a year, SUPE has been embraced nationwide, becoming an invaluable resource in classrooms, homes, and communities. Whether you're a concerned parent, an educator, or someone who simply wants to make a difference, SUPE is here to help you. Visit addicted.org/SUPE today to join the fight against substance abuse and start making a difference in your community.
They all use Grindr to find their hookup for crystal meth, and you can do that within an hour. So it's so easily accessible. The other thing is it has its own Zoom channel. There are Zoom channels where you can log in 24/7 and you can use with other men. You have to be using, there are moderators on there. You have to be injecting or smoking or you get kicked out. So you can go on and use with other men all around the world anytime.
Oh my God.
Yeah, yeah.
I mean, I'm like, oh my God.
Yeah.
That's like, talk about preying on a certain community, right. Because I'm betting that a lot of the dealers may not be gay men.
No, they're not. They're not. Because when you're on the substance, all you can think about is sex. It's sex and porn. I got to have a party. I have to have a group. I have to have an orgy. It's got to happen now. So a straight man can come in and he's not interested in that. So he's separated from it. I was a dealer. I know when I was a dealer, I couldn't deal because I would use and all of a sudden I'm having sex with everybody. So there's when you're traveling, it has its own Telegram group. You know, and you can say, where's the party, whatever city I'm in.
Wow.
It's hiding in plain sight. It's everywhere.
Yeah. You know?
And the gay men who, especially here in the South, they have a lot of internalized homophobia.
Right.
And they are afraid to express themselves. They're already shameful about having sex anyway. This just gives you an instant liberation and you can explore and you can be whoever it is you want to be without any judgment. It's all such a welcome, be as freaky as you want to be, you know, club.
Yep.
Yeah. So it's just the way that you have to recover from this is so different because you wake up at 3 a.m. and you can access it within 10 to 15 minutes.
And I just want to make an editorial comment here. We don't know, obviously, all of the listeners that we have. And I'm just going to say, I don't care what your viewpoint is about homosexuals and gay or what have you. It's not okay to target that community with drugs. It's not okay. Some people are going to disagree with me on this, but you know, we know that a lot of drug dealers go on Snapchat and TikTok to target young people. That's not okay either. But I'm that's just my editorial comment because it's like, you know, it doesn't matter what your viewpoint is on it. It's not acceptable to prey upon a certain demographic. And that's pretty scary.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know
that we've taken on some of, I volunteer for Controlling Chemsex. It's a nonprofit out of London. The CEO has taken on Grindr and tried to get them to regulate the way that they operate this app. It's a game. You know, you get addicted to scrolling to find yet another man and another party and another orgy and another and another. And you become a zombie to this app.
And it's only for gay men. It's not for gay ladies, right?
No.
Okay.
No.
Okay.
No.
Okay. Dallas, let me just kind of change tactics here a little bit. Tell us a little bit about who you are, where you grew up, kind of what led you into the whole crystal meth addiction and like that.
Yeah. So I grew up in West Virginia, very backwoods. And when I say backwoods, West Virginia. So my graduating class had, I think, 40 people in it.
Oh, my goodness. You have me beat. I had 126. I was in a military high school in London. Oh, so you have me beat 40. Okay.
Yeah, it was very small, very small. And I was born to teenagers, by the way. And then my mom was very strict Pentecostal. My dad was a hellraiser, right? And so I was somewhere in the middle and I didn't fit in either one.
Sometimes the hardest thing about getting someone into recovery is getting them to agree to treatment. Bobby Newman, a certified drug counselor with 30 years experience and an over 85% success rate as an interventionist, has created a series of 12 videos that you can use right now to learn every step to get your loved one to agree to treatment.
Call 866-989-4499 today.
And say the word podcast to get a 10% discount. or go to newmaninterventions.com and type in the word podcast for a 10% discount. The service comes with a free one-hour consultation with Bobby.
Many listeners tell us they want to join the fight, but do not have the time or money to act, lobby, or just help. If that's you, go to www.patreon.com/theaddictionpodcast and see how you can help.
But I was early on, it was obvious that I wasn't going to be like my dad.
Right.
And so I got reminded of that constantly by him. You know, I don't think you're my real son. And why aren't you acting like a real boy and things like that? My mom caught me once pretending I was performing on a stage and just berated me. You know, I was probably 3 or 4. So these are the memories that stand out. And these are the memories that created this belief that I needed to hide who I really was and that I was not accepted anywhere.
Well, if you're not accepted by your parents, I mean,
right.
Where are you supposed to go? What are you supposed to do?
Right. And so, you know, fast forward to junior high when I'm picked last for sports, you know, or actually they fought over who had to take me on their team, you know, and so I pretended to be straight and I got married. Right. And then we had kids right away. But of course, I never belonged there and I never knew how to talk to the other dads. You know, everybody was watching sports. I didn't like sports, you know, and so I always lived this hell inside of going up in church and trying to, you know, get delivered from the demon of homosexuality. And then 2 weeks later, I'm sneaking gay porn in this, you know, and finally I became suicidal. And so I came out and so before I came out, I was like, this is the answer. You know, I didn't know any gay people. All I knew was Will and Grace on TV. And then sometimes in a news coverage, I would see like a pride parade. So those are the ideas I strung together. And this was my belief that I'm finally going to be accepted. I'm finally going to be loved and I could be myself. What happened was very different. And when I went to the gay community, I was even more judged. And the feedback I started receiving immediately was I was too effeminate. Back to that internalized homophobia is that we don't act gay here. You know, I need you to act like a man. I'm attracted to men, not women. So I spiraled mentally because I remember leaving the club the first night and going out to my car and I'm just sobbing. I'm like, I belong nowhere, nowhere. I don't know who I am or whoever is going to accept me. And so the first time I'm scrolling on Grindr, you know, because I learned that I could hook up. I could show up at your house in the dark. We could have sex and that would be how I would feel at least somehow attractive. Right. Mm. So I showed up at a guy's house who said it was a Sunday afternoon. He says, I'm partying. Well, I thought cookout day, you know, day drinking, something like that. And so I come there and he's very attractive and he's looking at me, talking to me and touching me like I've always wanted. Mm. Like I thought this man really likes me, is attracted, he wants me. I didn't know, of course, that was the drug.
Right.
So he hands me a pipe because I told him I partied. And so we went on from there, but he taught me how to use it. And for the very first time in my life, I was 39 years old. The very first time in my life, I felt like I had arrived at my identity, that I could be myself. There's no judgment. I could explore. I was invincible. All inhibitions were gone, and I felt like I had finally found my tribe.
Wow.
Yeah. And so I spiraled from there. I was an executive at a law school. I was a college professor. I was making like $140,000 a year, and I dove in with both feet because I had waited so long, decades and decades to feel this way. And I realized there's this underground community here, and there's a place I could go anytime, any day, to use and to have sex and have all these men, you know, interested in me. And so I dove in, and within 2.5 years, I had been arrested 4 times, lost my home and my car. My kids had to go live with their mom and I was homeless under a tree.
Wow.
That's how fast it was.
Wow. Mm-hmm. Wow.
And so from there, my mom So my mom was in West Virginia, and the first time I got arrested, I had meth was the first drug I ever tried, ever. And I was so straight-laced and everything. And so I had to tell my mom I had been arrested because I knew my mugshot was going to be online and somebody was going to find it. So I called her and I was like, I'm arrested. And she's like, for what? Drug use. And she said, oh no, you're smoking pot. And so she was so disconnected from what the drug really does, and what it was about. And so the struggle was real between us through this whole thing, but she thought enough to buy a phone and pay for it. And that's what I had with me under that tree. And I finally had to call her and say, I need help. And so she picked me up and carted me to West Virginia to try to get sober. Meanwhile, my ex-wife became an alcoholic.
You are listening to the Addiction Podcast, Point of No Return. For more information on the podcast or to reach out if you have a story you would like to share with us, go to our Facebook page by the same name, or you can email us at theaddictionpodcast@yahoo.com or go to our website, theaddictionpodcast.com. And please remember to subscribe to our podcast wherever you listen to podcasts and give us a 5-star review.
And so the kids were basically living in an apartment alone. I came back to Charlotte and I turned myself into the police because I had an APB out because I didn't show up for my last court trial. And no one would answer my call because it's my fourth time, in jail. But my daughter, she was 16. So my 16-year-old daughter and my 14-year-old son picked me up from jail. They took me to the park and they said, we need a parent. And we need you to be that parent right now. And so that was it'll be 6 years ago in August. I just made a decision. I was looking at them and I was like, I'm done. All I had was the shirt on my back, as they say. That's really all I had. And so the three of us actually together rebuilt our lives.
Wow.
Into what we are today.
So. We would say that was your point of no return.
Yes.
Yeah. And that's pretty heavy duty when your kids look at you and say, I need a parent and I need it to be you.
Yeah. Yeah. Yes. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. 6 years. Well done on the 6 years, because from everybody we've talked to, and as we've said several times, Steve and I don't have our own history of addiction, but we know it's not easy. And you made that decision and here you are today. And so what did you do? I mean, in terms of making money and how did you guys build your life and where are you at today?
Yeah. So I immediately, I had some connections to the restaurant industry. And because of my criminal record, I could only work at a restaurant anyway. So I started serving tables, living on the streets some. I stayed with the kids somewhat too. Pretty much any gay man with a meth addiction had a sex addiction first or developed one.
Okay.
So I was still under the sex addiction. So the only way I knew I had to make money fast because, with an eviction and criminal record, finding a house to rent was almost impossible. But we found someone, an individual owner, said, okay, but two times the rent, two times the deposit, we need a big hunk of money. I actually, at that time, became a sex worker. So I didn't have to do that, but that's what I did because I was sober from meth, but not sober from sex.
Understood.
The sex addiction took a while. It's taken really, really the first 5 years to really sort through what that was all about. I was able to do that for about 3 or 4 months, got the big chunk of money we needed. And once I got the house, once we got in it and we're safely there, I was like, okay, I'm done. Done with that. We're going to start. And so I waited tables and I did Uber and anything else I could do. The kids also worked and pitched in. One by one, I was able to get a car. I was getting my license back. I went to drug treatment court. They offer that here in this county. You have to go see a judge every other week. You see your probation officer. You see your counselor. You go to rehab. You get tested 4 or 5 times a week.
Urine test for drugs, right?
Urine test. Yeah. So I did that for about a year and a half, made it through, and all the charges were dismissed.
Wow.
And in 2020, they paid for all the charges to be expunged.
So wow, well done.
Thank you. Like, never happened.
Yeah.
Yeah. So once that was off my record, I could get a, you know, go back to actual job.
A better job. Yeah. Because you better said job. You had been at a law firm, a law college?
Law firm. It was a law school. I was
law
the,
school.
The,
yeah,
the,
yeah.
The marketing. Yeah.
Okay.
So I went into nonprofit because my doctorate, by the way, is in nonprofit leadership. It was my
okay.
I always wanted to be in the nonprofit world before. And so that's what I went into. And I was helping homeless veterans in Charlotte here.
Oh, wow.
Get housed. Yeah. And then I got my, I went back to the same university and got an adjunct position back too. That took me a while to convince,
okay.
But luckily the same dean was there. He knew me pre-meth, uh-huh. and post-meth. And so he let me teach a class every semester. So I'm really glad to be doing that again too.
And what are you teaching?
I'm teaching organizational behavior. I'm teaching diversity in the workforce. It's all the leadership type classes for the MBA program.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. And yeah. Are you still working in the nonprofit arena?
I quit about 14 months ago to start my sobriety coaching because I being in the system and knowing crystal meth and gay men, I saw that there's gaps in the services that we offer.
Heck yeah.
And, you know, and to sit down with a gay man who's been on crystal meth, no one can understand a gay man who's been on crystal meth like a gay man who's been on crystal meth. And there's this instant connection and relatability. And so I'm able, and also I can think like them.
Right. It's not going to work if you haven't been addicted, and it's not going to work if you're not gay.
Right.
Because as far as they're, you know, it's like we've talked about how, you know, having someone in a white coat saying, oh no, don't do drugs.
Yeah.
It doesn't work, you know, but you have reality with them.
Yeah.
They have reality with you.
Yes. Yes. Right. And they can admit, you know, I had someone come to me and he said, I suggest they have a therapist too. Cause I'm not a therapist,
right.
But you know, he said, I told my therapist, I really wanted to go to the bathhouse last night and get pissed on. You know, that's the reality of crystal meth. And that's the reality of what he was tempted to do. She sat back and kind of, she had a reaction.
Right.
It just brought all this shame to him. And he's like, now I don't feel safe.
Yeah.
You know, so as you know, so I can hear that. And I'm like, yeah.
I understand.
Know, yeah. and so, but you know, the biggest thing that I help men do is after you've experienced sex on meth, it's such a high, you know, all the dopamine that's released, the experience, you just never, you don't think you can go back. Plus you don't have a libido after meth.
Mm.
It's completely gone. And there's erectile dysfunction to deal with.
Oh,
so
boy.
There, quitting the substance is most of the time, like it was for me, the easy part.
Right.
It's unpacking, and just like any addiction,
unpacking
all the stuff. You know,
because the drugs have been a solution to a problem.
Right. Right.
Yeah.
And you have to unpack that, and you have to learn what intimacy is, and you have to get in touch with your body again. And you're also, if you become a meth addict, you're also addicted to porn. That's all you want to do. Hours and days of pornography. So it's a lot to work through.
I can see how that would be. And I can also see, once again, you know, for them to be able to work with someone such as yourself who has experienced it, who's, you know, I know we throw this phrase around, been there, done that, but you have, you've been there and you did that. And you know what it's like. And I can see how valuable that is.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. And I've been so pleased with the way it's working and the difference that it's making. I'm going to get, emotional, but
it's okay.
It's not only the men, but it's their families.
Yes.
You know, their friends. I think of my mom, you know, and my poor country mama who just never got it.
Never understood.
And to see the healing that happens in such a ripple effect. I'm not just helping that person, you know.
Yep.
And so I think about my mom and I think about my kids and, you know, my sister, my family, everybody who suffered and drug through all of that with me.
Yep.
And it's just such, it's my passion, it's my purpose, and it's something that I'm just going to keep doing.
So many different layers and viewpoints and avenues that need to be addressed. And you're, like you say, and we've talked about this too, just, I mean, separate from the gay man, just addiction in itself and how it affects the people around the addict, because they don't understand. They don't understand why you can't just stop. Just stop, you know, it's more than that. And, you know, the way you're describing the whole meth effect on the gay man, it's even so much more than a lot of the addiction that we talk about. Do you know what I mean? Like, we know it's physical, spiritual, and mental, but to an even greater degree, it sounds like, with what you're dealing, or you've dealt with, and what you're dealing with.
Yeah.
Dallas, if you had like one piece of advice to give to our listeners on the subject of what you do and, you know, and the gay man and the meth addiction, what would it be? What advice would you give them?
For someone in the addiction or just...
And any, all aspects, or the friends and family, you know?
Yeah, yeah. So friends and family, I get a lot of those reaching out to me. And what I tell them is to just be present, you know, and look past the addiction, because you know who they are inside. Mm-hmm. But their thing is that expect a gay meth addict to turn on you, because there's something about this drug that makes all your loved ones your enemies. And you become ultra paranoid. There's psychosis that comes into play. I believed that my sister was out to get me. I believed that my mom had a whole plan to take me down. I turned on everyone who loved me the most. And if you can just accept that as and not take it personally, and just be present for when they do, it's like they're drowning and they come up for air once in a while. When they come up for air, just be there. And that's what's going to stick. And when men come to me and they don't know how to stop, you know, it seems so overwhelming. I always tell them, just today, do one thing differently than you've done before. Even if and set an extremely small goal to begin building that self-trust. Turn your phone off for 5 minutes. Just 5 minutes, walk outside. Something different to interrupt the pattern, the thinking. Send a signal to yourself, to your subconscious, to the universe. I'm changing. I'm done. I'm on my way. You know, I'm moving in a direction. And it, because to say I'll never use again, to say I quit today. And, you know, it just is too overwhelming, and it's setting yourself up for failure.
I was going to say, set yourself up for a loss, you know, but can I turn off my phone and walk outside for 5 minutes?
Sure. Yes.
You can do that, you know? I think that's great advice. And if someone listening, maybe they are a gay person with a meth addiction, mm-hmm. or they have a family member or a friend, how can they reach you? How do they find you?
So lots of ways. I have a website, drdallasbragg.com. I'm on every social media platform you can think of, which, by the way, they love me on TikTok. So my TikTok is just rolling along. I'm getting a lot of engagement there. But Dr. Dallas Bragg on TikTok.
And DR for Dr.
DR.
Right?
Yeah, DR okay. Dallas Bragg. Okay. I did just start a podcast.
What's it called?
It's called The Aftermath.
Okay. Like, and after M-Y-T-H.
M-E-T-H.
Aftermath. I got it.
Yeah, it's like a play on aftermath, but it's aftermath.
The aftermath. I like that.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. But I started this podcast in my mother's name, because I stop a lot of the interviews and I talk to family members and I talk to loved ones, because I want to say, pay attention to this. This is what's going on in your loved one's mind.
Right.
You know? So I'm talking to a lot of gay men who are past the addiction, but also also some experts. Today I released the episode where I interview my sister.
Okay.
And we found out in the interview how I remembered what happened was very different than
what she remembered. Wow. Wow.
Yeah. So that was interesting for me to discover that. My mom is going to be featured on it too. So I'm hoping the podcast can create some attention around the epidemic that's ravaging really through the gay population, old and young.
Yep.
There's no disparity. The research shows it's all ages.
Yep.
That's how they can reach me.
I appreciate that. And I appreciate you. I appreciate you sharing your story and shining a light on something that people need to be aware of. We did have another gentleman on and he talked about when he was in San Francisco, but he didn't talk about these apps that I recall, and it's scary.
Yeah. Yeah.
And I appreciate what you're doing, Dallas. I really do. And I appreciate you coming on and telling your story. Thank you. Once again, for everybody listening, his podcast is the Aftermeth Podcast. Yeah. And he is Dr. Dallas Bragg, drdallasbragg.com and Dr. Dallas Bragg on social media. Dallas with two L's, Bragg with two G's, DR for doctor.
Yeah, thank you, Dallas.
Thank you so much for taking the time to talk to us today. I am so glad that you're doing what you're doing and that you got your own life back together and you're still with your kids, I imagine. And that's awesome. I mean, very cool.
Yes, yes. We are the three of the closest friends. We really are.
I love that. I just love it. How old are they now?
22 and 20.
Okay.
Yeah. So
very cool.
My daughter is graduating from college next month.
Wow.
So, yeah.
And what's she going to do?
She's going into human resources.
Okay. Yeah. Fair enough.
She likes rules.
Okay. Well, there you go.
She was the grown up in my home for a while.
Understand. Yeah. Well, listen, you take care and thank you so much for talking to us today.
Thank you.
You have been listening to the Addiction Podcast, Point of No Return. For more information, reach out to us on Facebook or go to www.theaddictionpodcast.com. Our email is theaddictionpodcast@yahoo.com.